Welcome back to the Squawker Talker podcast. I'm your host, Greg Johnson. Joining me today is a veritable A-team of superb analysts and football thinkers. Yeah, that's what we're going to call you guys today. We've got Mo Butt. He's back again. You've been a bit ill, though, haven't you? You're off the bench.
I'm 70% fit, like Wenger used to say about Thierry Henry. I'm raring to go, though.
You haven't got red zone.
that's the
last thing on the pod, you had a gravelly kind of,
I'm mixing it up, keeping it fresh. Now I'm like Phoebe in that episode of Friends where she gets the cold.
Our second guest today is James Bench from the London Evening Standard. How are you doing?
Very well, thank you. I'm feeling well. Yeah, I'm feeling well.
Not under the weather?
Not at all.
Fantastic. Well, it's good to have you back. And Ollie Young-Miles is here as well. Squawker native, how are you doing?
Hello, Greg.
Yeah, I'm good.
We're going to quickly rattle off the FA Cup roundup, because obviously all the replays played during the week. Plymouth played against Liverpool, or should I say Liverpool played against Plymouth, because they did win. It was 1-0 down in the southwest. And Jurgen Klopp played a very young team again. Some people might say it's not like a FA Cup seriously, but he did this in Germany as well, didn't he? He plays young players in the Cups to kind of give them experience, see them through. But it wasn't the most convincing performance, was it really, Ollie?
No, they sort of laboured to it, but they got the job done eventually. I think, as you said, he's not too bothered about it. Similar to last season, really, he came in and he sort of prioritised the EFL Cup, as it's now sort of known as, got them to the final of that, and obviously they're in the semis this year. So I think that's the cup he's going to go for again.
And obviously he wants to win them both, though, surely. He's probably going to bring senior players in if they get closer to glory, aren't they?
I think, well, so far he's used the FA Cup to literally just blood his youngsters. And I think, it's a policy that's sort of, bearing fruit. We saw Trent Alexander-Arnold last week. Didn't look overawed at all by being at Old Trafford. And I think it's because he's playing against the likes of Plymouth and stuff in the Cup. I think if he wins the EFL Cup, then the FA Cup for Liverpool, I don't think he'll be too bothered about, really.
Southampton are also through into the fourth round, James. They beat Norwich at home. Club who outside are a bit of a poor run of form, but do you think it's a good result? Is the FA Cup something they can actually aim to win this season?
Yeah, I think what this sort of Southampton project really needs now is kind of sort of a trophy to sort of crown it off and sort of offer like a rebut to those that would just say they're a money making scheme. I think it's fantastic for them. Obviously, they've got Arsenal at home in the next round. I think the last time Arsenal went to St Mary's, they got absolutely battered 4-0. And, it'll be the Arsenal B team against, I think, Southampton's A team.
It's an oddly winnable tie, isn't it? You would think, getting Arsenal, that's bad news, but that's St Mary's.
Yeah, I mean, Arsenal will put out, a mixture of the sort of young players and then a Gabriel Rob Holding defence that I've got no doubt Shane Long or whoever would really enjoy playing against.
But maybe Nathan Redmond, as was the case against Liverpool, might not put away the chances. That might be a chance for Arsenal when they do face Southampton. But Lincoln and Sutton are through into the fourth round. They're the two kind of giant killers, even though the Giants are kind of getting smaller by the year. Wimbledon, are they a giant? Not so sure. But a great story
stature,
for both of them.
In stature,
they are giants, especially in compared to Sutton, who are, I think they are, what, the sixth level?
What's the conference or whatever we call it now, the Vanarama National League Premier Division. But interesting, they can't afford to get promoted to League Two because all their money comes from renting out their 3G pitch. So the worst thing in the world that could happen to them would be promotion. So actually, this is they think they're going to earn $300,000 for this. Leeds United on telly. It's a good tie for them to get.
But yeah, Lincoln as well, another team, good to see them through. And Accrington Stanley are also going to be in the fourth round. Another kind of cult club, if you will.
It's great having Accrington in the cup, isn't it? I think there's so few good fourth round ties that it's just quite nice if there's some nice names there at least for Soccer Saturday at 3 o'clock, because there won't be many good.
I mean, Derby versus Leicester sounds like a pretty classic fourth round FA Cup encounter. Two kind of, no? Not convinced by that?
Tottenham Wickham is the big one. Just on Lincoln though, that goal.
Tottenham Wickham is the big one, is it?
Yeah, of course. Gareth Ainsworth, trendy manager coming to White Hart Lane.
Oh, of course, yeah.
Yeah, it'll be an interesting game, that.
Can Vincent Janssen score from open play?
No,
absolutely not.
The race goes on.
No, you can't.
And also Newcastle against Oxford, which George Ellick isn't here, our head of analysis, but was a big Oxford fan. Sure, he's rubbing his hands with glee as we speak somewhere, dreaming about that tie. Now we're going to move on now to preview the Premier League weekend. And the big game is obviously Manchester City versus Tottenham Hotspur. Last time Tottenham played City, they won 2-0 at White Hart Lane, bringing their early run of form, 6 out of 6 in the league, to an end. They haven't quite looked the same since, have they, James?
No, they absolutely haven't. And it's quite tempting to think that Tottenham may well just be Pep Guardiola's bogey team. They do everything that Man City hate. I mean, they shoot a lot, and we know that Claudio Bravo just is really, he's really not a fan of you shooting. It's not fair. It's just not on. You know, they've got creativity and pace down the flanks. They'll press high, and you know, John Stones, he tried booting the ball into touch against Everton. That didn't work.
They've got actual real fullbacks as well.
Oh, I mean, what would Pep give for Kyle Walker and Danny, for Ben Davis and Kevin Vimmer, even? Not Kevin Vimmer.
Kieran Trippier.
They, you know, Tottenham reserve defenders just merge into one for me. I was actually stood next to Michel Vorm the other day at the NBA and genuinely didn't have a clue who he was.
He's a handsome man.
He is. I just thought he was a generic handsome man.
We just admire him going, oh, I wish he was a footballer so we have a chat with him.
He had a very strange coat on, didn't he?
A very stylish
This is the thing with Spurs. I mean, James touched on it there. Poch has always had a thing with Pep, always made it very, very difficult for Pep. I mean, every single game they played when they were Barcelona and Espanyol manager, respectively.
Well, he was the first...
Yeah, he beat him at the Camp Nou 2-1 in 8-9. It was an impressive game, and he kind of replicated that blueprint, basically, as he went on. Now, okay, a lot of the games he ended up getting smashed in because Guardiola had probably the best team ever, and he had Espanyol. But now that the playing field in terms of actual quality of the teams are level almost, you saw what happened at White Hart Lane. It was the demolition. And the thing with City, what the one thing that's consistent beyond their terrible fullbacks and weak goalkeeper is they don't have a conviction in the style of football they're supposed to be playing. Any slight bit of pressure applied to them and they panic. And Spurs really hammered them with that. And they haven't recovered since. They haven't recovered that confidence, that swagger that, yes, this is what we're meant to be doing. That's the best thing Guardiola's sides have always had, is the belief in what they're doing.
And Pochettino's side definitely has that.
Oh, yeah. I mean, for me, I think it's really summed up in that sort of Wanyama, Dembele midfield. There's just such power there. And, you know, City, maybe they'll line up with Zabaleta and Toure again. They'll get smashed off the park in the first 10 minutes. I don't want to sound... I don't want to, like, make myself sound stupid next week, but this, I mean... What am I going to batter them, surely?
We were looking at the team the other day in the office, and apart from Danny Rose, every single member of the team is, I think, 6 foot more, actually. I think most of them are 6'2". Tottenham are huge. Yeah. Absolutely massive. And, I mean, City have actually... Pep Guardiola has declared City out of the title race after they got beaten 4-0 against Everton last weekend. But with Mauricio Pochettino's team beating West Brom 4-0 at home, a side that in their last four attempts at home couldn't beat them, is it on this year? Are Spurs really in the title race?
I mean, it's always going to be, every team that's sort of challenging is always looking for Chelsea to slip up. You know, 7 points is a big gap to have, and they don't have European football sort of, you know, holding them back either. But Tottenham, if you know, if they are genuine title challengers, this is the game that they need to sort of step up and win. You know, they've won 6 games in a row in the league. That was the most they managed last season around this sort of time. And then they sort of stumbled a bit in March. They lost to... Who's it? They lost to West Ham and they drew with Arsenal in consecutive games. So they need to sort of win this to keep their momentum up and keep pressure on Chelsea, who have got a very winnable game at the weekend. I just think with Spurs as well, it's going to be interesting to see if he sticks with the back three. Jan Vertonghen, I think, has been Spurs' most underrated player almost this season. He's sort of been playing his best football since his first season in North London. How they replace him, they can bring in Ben Davis or Carter Vickers or Kevin Wimmer, or they could go to a back four. Obviously, the 2-0 win start of the season, they played 4-2-3-1. Can't remember exactly. And Son terrorised City. He's been out of the side recently. So it'll be interesting to see if he reverts to a back four or keeps with a back three.
Mm. I mean, after the win against West Brom, Pochettino said that this side are more mature. If you actually look at the points per game, they're winning more at this part of the season than they did last year. Do you think something's changed with Spurs if they do get on a run and they do actually start to pull Chelsea back? Can they sustain it, or do you think they might flop again like they did at the end of last season?
Yeah, I mean, I think we do have to be careful because it is almost the sort of same story repeating itself, and you do look around and you see the same figures and you see the same problems happening. I mean, wasn't it almost exactly this time last year that Jan Vertonghen got his injury? So, I mean, if you want to sort of look at it in a glass half full perspective, this is a real chance for City, for Tottenham to prove, no, you know, we're not the same team as last year. And I've got no doubt, you know how angry Pochettino was at the end of last season. And you'd hope that that's really filtered through to them. You know, I want to give them the benefit of the doubt. Teams become stronger after, you know, most teams should become stronger after something as kind of, to be frank, humiliating as what happened to Spurs at the end of last season. Yeah, I don't think it'll be the same story this year.
I think one of the big issues last season in why they tailed off was because the squad wasn't strong enough. And I think although not many of the summer signings have really come good, only Wanyama has, they are stronger in the middle of the park, as James mentioned. Wanyama and Dembele have been absolute rocks in the heart of that midfield for Spurs. You know, they've absolutely bullied Kante and Matic off the park. So they've got those two. And I think a lot of the squad players from last season who perhaps weren't really up to it have stepped their game up. Trippier against Watford was very good. Ben Davis, I think, playing in a back three for Wales has improved as a footballer as well. So, you know, I think that is one area where they are stronger than last year. Their squad overall is a bit better.
I mean, Pochettino did say after, I think, the win in the FA Cup over Aston Villa that he thinks he needs about 25 players for a proper squad, everyone of a similar ability, not just in terms of technical ability, but mentality as well. I think that's the thing he felt they were lacking last year. But given what he's got going into this game, given the problems City have got, Pochettino holds the advantage, doesn't he, surely? You said earlier about his tactics. We've got these fullbacks also in Dele and Eriksen. They've got probably two of the form players in the league at the moment playing behind Harry Kane in this kind of weird double 10 thing. I mean, how can City counter this?
Oh, they can't. I mean, they just have to pray, basically. You know, Pep's
not going to pray, though. He's going to have a plan, isn't he?
No, he'll probably do both. But, you know, he's famous for coming up to having plans. I mean, you know, the standard counter for a back three is a back four. But the thing is, City's fullbacks are so terrible that when they play a back four, when they attack with nine men, essentially. Well, eight men, actually. They don't include the goalkeeper. You know, so it massively hampers them. So he's been having to play back threes to get around that. But you can't play a back three with that many bad centre-backs. You know, you've only got one who's like playing there, his level, that's Otamendi. John Stones is not ready to be, you know,
is there any chance we might see the return? I know he's tried it twice now, both at Bayern and at City, yeah, and it hasn't quite worked, and he's kind of gone back away from it. But is there any chance we could see inverted fullbacks in this game? Because of any of the ties that we've seen City against in over the past few weeks, this is the one that actually kind of makes sense, doesn't it? If you've got Dele Alli and you've got Christian Eriksen trying to play in that gap in front of City's defence, yeah, surely you want the guys from the side coming in to squash them.
It kind of does, and I understand your point there, but the problem with that is always it exposes you to width, and with the three at the back and with these two wing backs, Spurs have the two best fullbacks in the league, and when they're playing the three at the back, they just let them fly forward. They'll kill City wide if City try that. That's what Pep realises, that that's a really good idea of a system, but you need to have really, really, really effective midfield players to own the ball. And City can't own the ball yet. They're not that confident with it. They don't have enough assurance in what they do.
I think that the challenge for Pep, if you remember that famous Dortmund game where he came up against a sort of high-pressing team for Bayern, and he just had that alternative of, I'll stick Javi Martinez as a... whatever it is, a midfield target man, Marouane Fellaini style, and we'll ping it over the top to break the press. But he doesn't have anyone like that. He has one striker effectively that he could really trust against Spurs. I like Iheanacho, but he's not even a decent backup. You know, he's got...
It's pretty good in the air, though. Maybe he could be.
Perhaps, but it's just that what do you then do about your defence? Who do you have that's kind of really capable of hitting those balls long, up to an Iheanacho?
The bigger problem actually is the fact that Alderweireld would just eat those balls up all day long. I mean, against Dortmund, there wasn't an aerial presence like that. Mm. You know, Javi Martinez could win those balls. Now you play up there, Alderweireld's just going to be gobbling those balls up all day long. It's, you know, City have a lot of deficiencies in their squad, primarily in defence. And I think, honestly, I mean, unless they sign two fullbacks and maybe even a centre-back, they're not going to make top four this year. They might be lucky to make top six. Their defensive problems just destroy the entire...
Doesn't sound likely, though, does it? I mean, I don't think Pep likes using the January window to make wholesome changes.
He's not really been a fan of that. I mean, he likes to build his squad in the summer, work with them, and then... Yeah. But honestly, they didn't do enough work in the summer. Pep, whether it was Pep's decision or Chicky Bagotestein, whoever it was, they left the squad really short, and it destroys them. They can't play four at the back, and then they play three at the back, and there's not enough good defenders. Mm.
Final word on this, Ollie. City versus Spurs?
Yeah, I just think that, you know, the thing with City is their spine is just fundamentally weak at the moment. They've got Bravo in goal, who, you know, I was looking at the stats earlier, he's made the lowest number of saves of any first-choice keeper in the Premier League this season. He's made 26 in 18 games. In front of him, he's got two centre-backs who can't organise or lead in Otamendi and Stones. And ahead of that, they've got Zabaleta and Toure. So if Spurs...
And that's what, his sixth-choice combination there?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, Zabaleta hasn't played centre-mid, I mean, ever since his Espanyol days. You know?
He's no Philip Lahm either.
And he's 32, 33
no
now.
Fabian,
I think he's not. I mean, the only thing that City have in their favour, I think, in this game is the fact that they do have match winners at the other end. And if they can keep Spurs out, you know, away from their goal, they've got the likes of De Bruyne, Aguero, Silva, Sterling, who can, you know, turn it on at the other end.
And we have seen Leo Sané play as like a wing back. So.
Strange he hasn't played more. You know, he's showed a lot of flashes when he has played.
So maybe we might see a bit of an experiment from Pep, as we often do in these big games. So that could be a fascinating watch in its own right. Regardless of who wins that game or draws or whatever, the team they have to try and pin back in the title race is Chelsea. And they look like they've got a bit of a gimme this weekend, don't they? Against Hull City, against a team where it all began in some ways. They were the first team to actually start the 3-4-3 against them. And obviously after that, they went on a 14-game winning run. Is it going to be a bit of a... Bit of an ugly sight for the Tigers, James.
Well, I mean, Marco Silva, if Paul Merson's to believe, has he ever even seen a back three? I mean, you know, I don't know. I have a sneaking feeling that Hull need points. And I saw the highlights of their win last week, and they played quite well. I have that sneaking feeling, but yeah, I mean, Chelsea will batter them. It looks like Diego Costa will be back in the starting lineup as well. And what Hull can do against him when he's in the mood, I don't know.
He's got the eye of the tiger in some ways, Ollie.
Okay. Just one thing on Hull. I think, I mean, Chelsea, I think, will beat them. You know, Snodgrass doesn't look like he's going to play. Livermore seems to be going to West Brom. But I think the one thing for them is last week they had Abel Hernandez back. He's the one sort of striker that they have, really. When he's played, they've won 4 games out of 11. When he hasn't, they haven't won one in 9. So he's the one player they'll be looking to against Chelsea. But otherwise, I mean, Chelsea bounced back really well last week. And as you said, this is a game that they really should be winning.
If I was Conte, actually, I wouldn't bring Costa back into the fold, because you look at what Hull was sent. The same thing that happened again last week. You look at what Leicester centre-backs wanted. They would want a physical challenge, you know? And you look at what Curtis Davis is going to want. Curtis Davis is going to want someone who's going to try and beat him in the air, try and wrestle with him physically. You put Hazard, Pedro and Willian in front of him again, just constant ball movement, constant player situation. They'll tear Hull to pieces. I mean, they'll probably still win with Costa. They're good enough anyway. But I think Conte should really try and emphasise this false nine system, because whether or not Costa is unsettled or injured, there's something wrong with him right now.
But surely when they're at the best in 3-4-3, you get the best of both worlds. You get the two players flirting around, doing all this lovely stuff. And then in Diego Costa, you've actually got a guy who's in the form he's in. Yeah. He could probably still beat Curtis Davis in all those one-on-one
battles. No, he probably could. But I'm just saying, I think, you know, there is something odd with Costa right now, whether it's injury, whether it's personal issues, whether it's China. No one knows what it is, but there is something going wrong with him right now. It could derail further. I would say this is a gimme hole, right? We've said this. So prepare yourself for the worst if it happens. Keep going with this false nine thing. Make sure your players are better at it. And, you know, it might really come and save your bacon later. I mean, they're going to win the league probably, but it might, you never know, it might save your bacon now. Maybe next season can be very useful.
James, when Costa was out through injury, actual injury that we definitely 100% knew it was an injury.
Oh, that one.
Last time Chelsea won the league, he struggled to get back into it when he did come back into the team. And there is a sense that he's a player that needs his momentum and needs to keep playing, needs to come back into the team. So while the idea of setting up a new system in case he goes could be a wise long-term option, do you think that they need to get him back in ASAP and get him back into gear?
Well, I think I totally agree. And I think there's politics at play here as well. You know, by sort of reports are that they're going to offer him a new contract. Around 300,000, and I think ultimately there's, you know, they'd still quite like him to stay, and to do that you need to convince him that, you know, what he has here is better than the offer of 500 grand a week in China. So actually I think that they may well, I totally agree with Mohammed that I'd like to see them play this false nine. I think it's just one of the best things to watch in the league, but you've got to show Costa how important he is if you want him to stay. And they're linked with Morata, they're linked with Lukaku. Neither of them are even a touch on Costa. He's the best striker in the league, so you've got to play him.
We've got a question from Twitter from Tom Jewett, who asks, is China, given all this stuff going with Costa, is it a threat to the Premier League?
No?
It's not, because it's a different kind of... it's aping the Premier League's models of, okay, we'll pay you lots of money, come play for us.
Because this is what the Premier League did to the Serie A in the 90s.
Exactly what the Premier League did to Serie A in the late 90s. But the problem is... The difference is that the Premier League has such... Premier League was, at least then, it was still an established... You know, English football was an established thing. Everyone knew what English football was. It had a platform to go on.
Had the brand.
Chinese football, for lack of a better word. Yeah, Chinese football is starting from, I mean, literally zero. So they will only attract absolute mercenaries for a while yet, until they can establish these clubs. I mean, only Guangzhou Evergrande has really made anything of themselves lately. Shanghai Shen was trying. You know, so... There's a way to go before they can reach anything like the Premier League.
I think at the moment the players that they're attracting are either unwanted at big clubs unwanted generally. I mean, Southampton were happy to take 12 million for Pella last summer. Obviously,
he was replaceable.
I think, yeah, exactly. I think the watershed moment will be if they get Acosta or, you know, one of the top players in the league, then we might see not an exodus as such, but more players willing to make that move. But I think until then, the Premier League will you know, remain the place to be for a lot of big players.
The thing to bear in mind with this, and we've already seen it over the past few weeks, is that the difference between the Premier League, which is fundamentally, you know, perhaps the most free market institution we have in Britain, and the Chinese Super League, is that the Chinese government take a real interest in what is happening in the Chinese Super League. And it doesn't necessarily reflect well on their soft power and their sort of global standing in the world that they're paying £60 million for someone who played 150 minutes of Premier League football for Chelsea. Yeah, the Diego Costa deal changes it a bit. But again, it doesn't probably project the image China wants to, that it's that they're a bargaining chip for a Chelsea striker to get a new contract, for Alexis Sanchez to get a new contract as well. You know, they've already started taking those steps, cutting down the number of foreign players in the team, because I think to an extent, the big thing for them is winning that World Cup by 2050. They're probably, who knows, one day they might have a better national team than England, solely because they're really, you know, focused on developing their own talent within the sort of structure that allows them to play alongside Ramirez and Hulk and Freddie Guarín, which will really bring the best out of Chinese footballers.
Well, maybe the question then isn't the players that they're buying into the Chinese Super League. Maybe it's looking at the Chinese investment in clubs around the world. Because if they then start sending all their best and brightest to the Etihad campus and places like that, maybe that'll be the way they build a team to win the World Cup of the future. But anyway, speaking of, as you did allude to just there, speaking of South Americans in London who are looking for big money moves elsewhere, Alexis Sanchez, even though Arsenal are scoring goals, they're winning games. I think they're second only to Liverpool for goals scored in the league this season at the moment. He doesn't look too happy. And Arsenal, there's just something not quite right about them at the moment, James.
Yeah, I think it's, you know, a 4-0 win over Swansea. I don't think I've ever seen such a bad 4-0 win. you know, as for Sanchez, we've got to be careful here. You know, obviously covering them week in, week out, I could get you a picture most weeks of Alexis Sanchez looking furious at something. It's kind of what makes him such a great player, is that sort of will to win that kind of overrides everything else, overrides his attitude with his teammates.
Well, they can't get him to stop training when he's injured and stuff like that. He's just obsessed, isn't he?
He is, and that it's what Arsenal need. But yeah, there's real worries. Juventus are keen, Paris Saint-Germain are keen, and it's just the thing with Arsenal is there's so little clarity over not only where the club will be. You know, everyone kind of has a rough idea that they'll be third or second this season, that, you know, it feels like they're going to make the Champions League. But even then, at the start of next season, they don't know who the manager is. It feels like it'll be Wenger, but Wenger's doing himself no good by not, you know, nailing his colours to the mast and saying, I'm staying or I'm going. Messer, everyone, ball's in your court.
So is he hedging his bets, do you think?
I think I think there's part of him now that thinks, maybe if I win the league, I'd like to bow out on top. And that might be the... And he's not going to win the league, but it might be the only thing that kind of convinces him to leave. On a personal level, I kind of think Arsenal owe him that chance to have one big trophy and bow out on a high. And I think that's why he hasn't really made his decision. I know that there's an offer on the table.
Mesut Ozil is another player, as well as like Sanchez, who's kind of coming to under fire a little bit. There was a piece on StatsBomb, actually, looking at the kind of numbers behind his season and suggesting that it's the lack of Giroud up there. It's like a more kind of permanent fix, like static target for him to find with his passes, that's bringing him down a bit. But I mean, earlier this season we were saying, oh, he's in the form of his life, he's not a creator anymore, he's more of a like kind of free roaming, you know, ball of wonderful attacking football. What do you make of Ozil? Has he just gone off the boil? Is he tired after many years of football? What do you think has happened to him, Ollie?
I think it's a similar thing to Sanchez. This contract situation surrounding him has just become a bit of a circus. It's bizarre that Arsenal have let their two best players run into their last 18 months of their deal. No other club really in Europe would allow that to happen.
They're meant to be the long-term planners, aren't they, under Wenger?
Yeah, I mean, you look across the road at Tottenham, obviously their players aren't as high profile, but they've given, 15 contracts this season? Ozil this time last year, you would have thought Arsenal would be putting together a massive contract for him because he was tearing up the Premier League. I mean, it's an interesting one. You know, Sanchez has sort of stepped up and become the talisman this year, which has minimalised his effect at some point. But against Stoke, he was very good. He still had decisive moments this season. Obviously, he's been injured a bit recently. And even though Arsenal aren't really playing well, they're finding solutions. They're winning games and they're grinding out points, which isn't something you'd, you know, sort of attribute to them previously.
Mm. I mean, earlier this season, I think it was in, was it November, where they had the lowest amount of shots on target in the league, but they were still scoring goals. They were basically putting away every single chance they had on goal. And some people say, oh, it's clinical. It's not really. It's kind of overperforming despite not creating good chances. And another team that are massively overperforming this season are Burnley under Sean Dyche, but they've only had, they've only won 1 point away from home, and that was at Old Trafford against Man United, despite playing well at other stadiums such as the Etihad against Manchester City. Could this be the game against an Arsenal side that aren't 100% sure about themselves that Dyche finally gets his win?
No, this is the game where... they're going to outplay Arsenal. Arsenal will look... Arsenal will look discombobulated, right? They'll probably have a lot of the ball. Burnley will probably have better chances. Then Arsenal will win 3-0. It's, you know, it's one of those things. That's Burnley's lot, almost, it seems to be. They'll play well, play with pluck and gusto, and then just get smashed because they're not good enough. Ultimately, I haven't seen Mesut Ozil look this bad since he was playing for Bremen. I mean, he looks genuinely just rubbish. And
is that a bit over the top?
No, it's not. Even when he was scoring goals, everyone was like, oh, it's just because he was scoring goals. He wasn't actually playing well. His chance.
We were talking earlier about Christian Eriksen and his kind of freedom of movement, and Eden Hazard and Pedro. It seemed to me like him and Sanchez were almost Arsenal's version of that.
They were clearly working something out, but it hadn't trickled down to Ozil yet. While Alexis had adapted to the striker role very well, as it was kind of still in the midst of figuring out how best to be that secondary player, I think. And then, I mean, it's Arsenal, they've got so much talent in their team. I mean, Iwobi's been fantastic lately. He was really, really good against Swansea. And I think, again, he and Alexis will probably be the driving forces against Burnley. I think maybe Giroud will score again because, of course, it was a header that did Burnley in when they played last. It was a Theo Walcott header, I think, actually, as well. But, you know, I like Burnley. I like Sean Dyche, but I don't think this is their time.
I mean, we always come back to this, but I mean, I personally thought Ozil and Sanchez and all the rest of them were very good early in the season, but it was because Santi Cazorla was there, wasn't it? And I know we always come back to this, it's like, oh, this is the problem, but is that still ultimately the root of the problem? They haven't got that guy. Xhaka isn't the same kind of midfielder.
No, but they're never going to have that guy. I mean, Santi Cazorla is, you know, he'll get a new contract next season and he'll play the same number of games and get injured. Because he's got, I mean, it's a dreadful shame, but he's got a chronic Achilles injury. I disagree with Mo that Ozil's been so poor. He is that sort of player. He's never been consistent. Perhaps he was consistent at Real Madrid, but I could be consistent at Real Madrid with Cristiano. You know, if I was supplying Cristiano Ronaldo.
He rarely completed games at Real Madrid either because he wasn't the star man.
So. Exactly. But I mean, even on his off days, barring the Man City game, he'll always give you something. You know, that West Brom game on Boxing Day, pretty poor throughout, but the cross he delivered Giroud, you know, Giroud still had a fair bit to do, but it was a brilliant delivery, brilliant cross. You know, he remains a cut above every Arsenal player except Alexis Sanchez.
Is it a perception problem then? Because as you say, the City game, there was, again, as you take a team with Alexis Sanchez, take a bit of footage out of context or take a footage at the worst possible moment, and it puts a kind of image out there. And that image of Ozil not really seeming to press, looking a bit languid, basically living up to every single caricature that's ever been put against him.
Yeah.
Is that basically the reason?
If you think that Arsene Wenger doesn't empower him to do that, you're completely wrong. Ozil is allowed to play like that because when he's at his best, it brings brilliant things out of him. He has been really good this season. He's just a kind of easy whipping boy, to be frank. Mm.
I think as well, it's one of those positions that's very easy to sort of drift in and out of form. As we were talking about earlier, Eriksen, you know, suddenly the Premier League's form player. I think a couple of months ago, he was, you know, Tottenham fans were sort of calling for him to be taken out of the team because he wasn't scoring, and despite having, you know, 10 shots a game, he wasn't assisting. I think Ozil, you know, he's a similar sort of player. When he's on form, he's unstoppable. And when he's not, he becomes an easy target, as James was saying.
I mean, this is never going to happen because we're talking about Arsene Wenger. But the reason that Eriksen is starting to get the plaudits is, for me, I don't think he's playing that differently to before. It's just that Tottenham's shape has changed to put him in situations that are more suited to what he's doing anyway. Like, he seems to have the space available to him is a little bit closer to goal. It's a little bit more...
Yeah, I mean, I've been saying for ages Arsenal should be playing 3-4-2-1.
But they're not going to, are they?
They're not going to. But it benefits all their players.
Is the problem with Ozil, Wenger? I know he said he's waiting to see what happens with the manager in terms of staying on, but do they need to change their formation to get more out of Ozil?
I think that comes into it, but then you look at Sanchez, who's changed roles and positions this season. He's adapted seamlessly to it. I don't think you can just pin it on that, you know, per se. I just think Ozil just hasn't found that form that he had last season. But then again, you know, few players few players could. He was absolutely ridiculous, you know, especially up until January, February last year.
He's hardly doing a Hazard, who went from player of the season to literally stinking the place out. So, but anyway, speaking of something or someone or a team, let's say, who were in fine form last year and kind of dipped off a bit, Stoke City, they're going to be hosting Manchester United. But their tails are up again now. They're kind of repeating the same pattern they did. They seem to do every year under Mark Hughes, is have a terrible start to the year, look like Hughes is going to get sacked, and then suddenly their key players will actually start being players, and they'll just go on a massive run. I mean, Peter Crouch, where's that come from, James?
I have no idea. And I mean, can you imagine... It's almost like we're now edging back towards original primal Stoke. I mean, Bojan is now being told, clear out, you're not Stoke enough for us. We want Peter Crouch up front. And I mean, I don't know where it's come from, but isn't it brilliant to see, like, you know, he's still kind of doing a job at 36, and he could certainly do a job on Man United.
Mm. He's the English Ibrahimovic, isn't he, Mo? You're just glaring at me. Why? Why?
Come on, man.
The age, the height. He plays up front.
Oh, Crouchy's great. He's a great laugh. He's good fun on social media and everything. But
as is Ibra.
Well,
the parallels are there. Come on.
Well, no, look. I think Stoke are a decent side. Pretty tricky, but their form is not. Their form is misleading. It's mostly against lower opposition in the Premier League. They're not really doing well against anyone that's actually, you know, good. So,
I mean, they got pumped 4-1 by Liverpool and Chelsea.
I mean, exactly. I'd imagine United would show up and just, I mean, not casually sweep them aside, maybe enthusiastically sweep them aside. You know, that Pogba has a lot to make up for after his hashtag debut against Liverpool. You know, he was in sensational form before that, so I imagine he'll get right back down to it and get on with it. You know, Zlatan could, you know, just is fantastic. Yeah, I think United just had too much firepower for Stoke.
This is the games that United have been absolutely dominating recently. It's the big games where their record falls off, but they're just absolutely chewing through the mid-table teams.
Yeah, and as Mo said, you know, Stoke have been sort of flat-track bullies this year. The teams they've beaten in the league, Sunderland twice, Watford twice, Hull, Swansea and Burnley, and they're ninth. You know, they're flat-track bullies. They're getting points against the smaller teams.
Their combined scoreline after facing Arsenal, Liverpool and Chelsea recently is 11-4 and not in their favour.
Yeah, and Spurs beating 4-0 at the Britannia as well. They've struggled against the big teams, but remember they got a point at Old Trafford earlier in the season. United were completely dominant in that game. Martial scored a great goal, and it looked for all the world that United would go home, get 2-3-4. And Joe Allen popped up, you know, in the midst of his goal-scoring run and got the equaliser. United have to be wary of their threat, but I do think United have changed a lot since that game, whereas Stoke haven't really pushed on. United are grinding out the results now, and I think they'll just do about enough to beat them.
You look at the players they've got in their team, Stoke, James, and they almost look like a Chinese Super League team. Do you know what I think? They've kind of got ex Champions League winners, former finalists.
They're being done out of a job here, aren't they?
I'm out of it just beat Super League.
Yeah. They could get the best out of Gael Kakuta.
Maybe that's it, yeah.
Lavezzi, come on over.
Well, Enzonzi, the man who's now conquering Spain for Sevilla, he's ex-Stoke, so maybe they are the underrated crash of world-class underrated stars, maybe. Probably not, though. But just to go back to what you were saying before, can maybe not Ibra, but can they dare to Crouchy? Can they dare to think that against Marcus Rojo and Phil Jones, Peter Crouch could have... As we were saying earlier, with Costa up against Curtis Davis, is there a more primal, as you were saying, battle there?
The game plan is a simplistic one. You hit Crouch and you have, you know, the sort of Arnautovic's and Allen's kind of running beyond or looking for those knockdowns. But it's
Mbula as well?
Yeah, absolutely. And Mbula can hit one from range. You know, it's not a complicated game plan. It's not one that's kind of impossible to play against. But, you know, only that's the sort of game plan where it only needs to break right once, and Stoke have mostly a decent defence. I mean, you know, in defence of one of those games, I saw them against Chelsea, and 4-1 really flattered Chelsea. And they gave them a good game for quite
a while. It seems like they get to a point, it's the same as against Liverpool, actually, for the first
half.
And
Arsenal as well. They played quite well against Arsenal.
But at least for the first half hour, they were really in it, and then they were a bit unlucky with a goal. They just seem to have like a mental collapse, and it all falls apart. But I mean, that game plan there, as James described it, that sounds a little bit like a mini-me version of Mourinho's United. And I don't mean that in any disrespect,
no,
but you've got Zlatan up front, who's the holding man. You can send the ball up there, even all their goal, David De Gea and the defenders in the programmes this season have been talking about how it's great playing up to Zlatan, because he'll always give you something when you send the ball up there. But then off him, you've got Martial, you've got Mkhitaryan, the the dare I say, the Arnautovic type people of Old Trafford. And you've got Pogba as well doing his thing from midfield. So it's all about the quality, isn't it? Rather than like a specific kind of, you know, game plan.
Yeah, game plans only work with skill sets you have available to you, you know.
I mean, do you need a game plan with players with that quality?
Yeah. I mean, not against teams that aren't as good, like against Stoke, for example. But, you know, if you don't have a real cohesive idea of what you're doing against teams like Liverpool, for example, you can come unstuck. When they press you, then you panic because you don't have an idea what you're doing and you just start freestyling and then your system falls apart. But, you know, I mean, I'm really hoping actually against Stoke that United play Fellaini and Pogba and Mourinho just goes, I'm going to do exactly what you're doing. And matches them and we just have a long ball fest. Just like Zlatan and Crouchy dueling long balls. Fellaini
give the grass a rest.
Just something different, you know, it'd be interesting. But I don't think we'll see it. I think United will just keep it on the deck and, you know, express themselves that way. But, you know, it'll be interesting to see, especially because Jones, I mean, you know, Liverpool kind of mortalised Jones. I mean, he wasn't that he was ever immortal, but he was looking really, really good. And everyone with Liverpool were like, no, actually, remember, he's not that good.
Yeah, they press him, it didn't always look that good. But speaking of quality, speaking of this incredibly vast squad that United have, I mean, I'm sure we'll talk in a minute, they're now officially, according to Deloitte,
the richest club in the world, revenues of over £500 million.
Wow. And the big rumour, I mean, I know it's the January transfer window, but the big rumour at the moment looks to the summer with Antoine Griezmann. Apparently, I think it's £101 million they're talking about. It's a figure in
a lot of matches.
It's buyout clause, basically.
It is, yeah. And then Daniel Beckley on Twitter has asked, do United need Antoine Griezmann? And if so, where would he play and who in place of who? Where would you see him slotting into the team?
Simply, yes, they do need him. They're
you don't turn
well.
Out a player of that quality, do you?
No, exactly. If you've got the money to go out and strengthen your team, you do it. And just imagine, I think Griezmann is, you know, a lot of people seem to think he's a lone front man. He's not. I think he's best playing off, like Giroud, playing off Giroud at the Euros. He was devastating. Playing off Ibrahimovic, even if it would be for one season, would just be, you know, incredible to watch. And just adding him into that mix of Mkhitaryan and Pogba, United would be, well, on paper, they'd be absolutely unstoppable with that forward power.
Does he just basically step into Rooney's role?
I mean, essentially, yeah, there's two ways you'd use him. I could see Mourinho using him. One is a number 10 in a 4-2-3-1 when you're playing a weaker team or a team that's where you're going to have the ball, basically. Well,
he's probably more of like a Dele Alli type 10, isn't he?
He's a second striker. He's not creative. He's not a creative player. He's not going to be standing a thread in through balls, although he can pay a decent pass, but no, he's going to be making runs off the back of Ibrahimovic. Ibrahimovic will drop into his areas
for Pogba to find.
Pogba's Zlatan, they're all teaming up well. The wingers will find him well. Lucky there for France at Euros, he'll find goal scoring chances and he'll score goals. But in games where United will maybe, let's say, park the bus, play defensively, big games, you know, Mourinho's tactic, you could play him as a number nine. You play him in transition. That's exactly what Diego Simeone did last year at Atletico Madrid and this year to an extent. I mean, you know, destroyed Pep Guardiola and Luis Enrique, you know, Bayern and Barcelona last year in the Champions League, playing Griezmann as a number nine in a counter-attacking system, because you just compress the space back and you hit long balls and he can chase them. He's fast enough to chase them. He's skillful enough to hold the ball up by himself and to actually bring a teammate into play. The number seven shirt just became available at Man United.
We'll get onto that in a minute.
This is a French guy wearing the number seven shirt. It feels like it should happen. Whether or not it will or not, it just feels like it makes sense. It's a perfect fit between player and club and shirt number and nationality and just everything, basically.
Given the seven was also worn by wingers in the past. He was a winger at Real Sociedad before he went to Atletico. People are saying in the future they want Martial to go up front. Could he slot in on the wing in place of him?
Yeah, I mean, you could theoretically put Martial as a number nine, Mkhitaryan as a left winger, Griezmann as a right winger. You could play orthodox... Have Griezmann left, Martial right.
Basically, you can do anything with him you want.
There's so much versatility in him. It's ridiculous.
I just think the issue with that is if you're paying £100 million for a player, the first player in history to be worth that, he becomes the focal point of your team. You don't shunt him out to the wing where, although, yes, he is very good, you play him in his best position. We saw with Pogba earlier in the season, he was coming, you know, under probably unfair criticism for not doing enough. Yeah, he wasn't playing in the role that suits him. Since they've changed their formation to suit him, we've seen United and Pogba, you know, flourish. So I think if they sign Griezmann, he's playing in that 10, or as Mo said, in a counter-attacking number 9 position.
Well, then, James, we're saying there that United are looking better and Pogba's looking better now they're playing this 4-3-3. Now, 4-3-3, maybe you don't have the role that Griezmann's best at. So
no, absolutely.
Is this a case of gilding the lily? Does it make any sense? It sounds great and it's going to excite people, but does it make any actual sense for United to sign him?
You do have a nagging feeling that Manchester United are inching just towards better by Galactico this summer because, I mean, don't they have a great
pacey striker who can play kind of across the front line, and his name's Marcus Rashford. And yeah, it just feels like that 6 months will go down as a bit of a blur when he's playing at West Ham or Everton, because they don't have an interest in giving him time to develop. I think, you know, it's pretty clear Mourinho would trust him and would give him more game time if there weren't better options available. Adding another one and another one and another one. Yeah, it would be gilding the lily, and they need a really good defender, and they probably should spend £100 million on that.
I mean, Griezmann's versatile. Can he play at centre-back?
No. he's absolutely right. You know, the big needs in the squad are central defence and a defensive midfielder replacement for Michael Carrick. Those are the two big needs in the squad. Now, I mean, if United still have the money to do that, in addition to spending £100 million,
by the sounds of it, they probably do.
Yeah, then by all means, go ahead. But yeah, it is essentially you're in the league. United have been Galactico for a while. Ed Woodward's entire game plan is, I'm going to buy famous players. That's basically what he does.
Juan Mata.
He bought Juan Mata because basically everyone was depressed because David Moyes was rubbish, and it cheered everyone up for like 20 minutes. It was like, yeah, Juan Mata. So, I mean, it's worked out now.
Well, Memphis Depay was a similar signing like that. It was they famously beat Liverpool to his capture. He was coming to join Louis van Gaal at Man United. All the kind of the stars lined up, as it were. But he's now been sold off to Lyon. Morgan Schneiderlin's also gone off to Everton. This week, Louis van Gaal actually retired from football. But how many of his signs are going to stick around, do you think, after this summer, James?
It sounds like Luke Shaw's going to go. I mean, we were talking about this on Twitter yesterday, and That's a really interesting one for me, because Luke Shaw, I think, would be an upgrade on the left back at every top six team other than Tottenham.
Mm. Yeah, Tottenham are the ones linked with him.
Yeah. I mean, that would be mad. But certainly Arsenal would love to have him. Chelsea would be perfect for Marcus Alonso's role. Would Man United be able to do that? Or maybe they'll just burn his salary. You know, what is it, $100,000 a week maybe at most? Yeah, stick him in the reserves. Keep him until he's kind of useless, and you can sell him on to sell him back to Southampton or Everton or a mid-table team. But it'd be such a shame.
It is a big shame, because, you know, I mean, remember him, you know, a couple of years ago when he burst onto the scene at Southampton. He was brilliant, absolutely brilliant as a teenager as well.
And you say he's got every single quality you want from a Mourinho player as well.
Yeah, it's just odd. I think it must just be a personality clash. I think Shaw, you know, perhaps I think he's still getting over the effects of that injury. And, you know, with Mourinho, he's such a... I can't really think of the word. He's so demanding of his players. I don't think that personality, you know, between them fits, really.
Next game we're looking at now is Liverpool versus Swansea. Any signs of life for Swansea? They got absolutely destroyed 4-0. But as we said earlier, it wasn't the most convincing win for Arsenal. But surely there's not much you can take from that as a Swansea fan.
Yeah, the thing that's worrying me slightly about Swansea is their signings. They've bought Martin Olsen this week, who's been relegated 3 times in the last 5 years. From the Premier League, and they've bought Tom Carroll, who is, I wouldn't say, is a relegation type player. You know, he does a job in a team that dominates the ball.
Well, he's a relegation type player in that he's good enough.
He's not good enough. Yeah, exactly. He's not going to get his foot in. So that's one thing that worries me a bit about them. And, you know, they need a centre back. If they're going to stay up, they need a centre back. I think getting a new manager in has given them, you know, a bit of lease of life. They were okay for a while against Arsenal. But they need to start picking up points, and at the moment their squad just isn't strong enough.
Mm. Liverpool, speaking of strong squads and all the rest of it, Liverpool will be happy with their point from Old Trafford. But is their title challenge on hold a bit until Mane comes back? He's such an important player for them, and plus Matip as well, with his situation, with the uncertainty over whether he's retired from Cameroon or he's not, and all this kind of FIFA stuff. Are Liverpool just kind of have to just hover for a bit?
I think they would do well to keep in the hunt this month. I mean, in some ways, the fixture list has been quite kind for them here, because, you know, they could stick out any front line and they'd still, it'd rip through Swansea. But yeah, they'll do well to still be in touch. I think what we might look back on is sort of say, this is kind of where their title challenge really faded, you know, from that Sunderland draw onwards, and then losing Mane, and the Matip situation is a mess. A mess, and it's a real loss for Liverpool.
And FIFA aren't helping in any way. They're probably the ones causing it in a lot of ways. No clarity from the big boys at the top. But the fixtures are building up now for Liverpool. They've got the League Cup, then the FA Cup, then a trip to Stamford Bridge. We saw it happen when fixture congestion got in the way for Klopp last year. Injuries started happening. Could it get worse for Liverpool?
Yes. Just going by history, yes, it will get worse.
Liverpool, well, big Phil Coutinho's back.
Coutinho's brilliant, but then someone else will get injured. You know, Klopp's Liverpool have shown a repeated inability to avoid injury. When fixtures pile up, people get hurt. Klopp's side of football is very physically demanding. And players break under extreme stress, basically. The problem Liverpool have is they have only got a few key players, and if any of them go down, they are in real trouble, basically. They're really missing Matip. You can tell, for instance, you know.
But once they are back in the team, will there be enough time for them to go on a run to get back in contention, do you think, James?
No, I think it's really fading right now. I don't want to sound like Raymond Verheyen, but yeah, I think they, you know, you looked at that, you just looked at the final 15 minutes of the Man United game, and they really, really, really looked tired. Simple as that. And, I the League Cup will just take more and more out of them.
Speaking of tiredness and cup competitions, we're going to fly for the rest of the games now. But speaking of that, West Brom will be taking on Sunderland. Tony Pulis's side were absolutely torn to pieces by Spurs last weekend. But they should prosper against a Sunderland side that were themselves bludgeoned by Burnley in midweek. I mean, you could probably say comparable approaches. Sunderland are looking a bit dead on their feet at the moment, so probably one for West Brom to really get their teeth stuck into. Palace take on Everton. The Eagles were out a win since December the 3rd. And Sam Allardyce's usual tricks aren't really kicking in as quickly as you bet. He's not quite galvanising them in a way that you'd expect them in past jobs to do so. Whereas Everton, I mean, they're going to probably take the City B team momentum forward, aren't they, James?
Yeah, I think so. Just in terms of Allardyce, I mean, a lot of respect for Palace and what they're trying to achieve, but you know, they've brought in a manager who is the polar opposite of what Alan Pardew, at the very least, sees himself as. You know, he was trying to build a possession-based team there that then kind of got to the final third, put in good crosses for Benteke. And therefore, he's kind of, you know, Allardyce has been left with a squad that's nothing like what he's used to inheriting and likes working with. I think this might be the year that it all falls apart. Although, a lot of love for Sully Kaikai. He's better than Andros Townsend and should start this weekend.
Andros Townsend, who rumour has it could be back off to Newcastle United in a kind of Robbie Keane-esque switch. But anyway, we're going to move on now. Middlesbrough versus West Ham is another game on Saturday. Sam Butcher's side beat Palace 3-0 last weekend. But, you know, we've been saying it quite a lot of time in this pod. Is their position in the league a little bit false? They've got quality still, but with the Pye situation dragging on, it's kind of a bit of a weird mood around the club at the moment. But do you reckon they could beat Middlesbrough? Middlesbrough haven't had a win in the league since December the 5th, Ollie.
Yeah, I think they can. I think they showed last week, you know, there's a togetherness in that squad with, you know, all that Payet nonsense sort of
hanging
around the
club. They've
kicked
them out of the WhatsApp group now, haven't they?
Yeah, deservedly so, probably. Mikel Antonio has been, you know, obviously not their star, but they're, you know, he's chipped in with a lot of goals this season. He got 3 assists last week. They need players like him and Lanzini to step up and replace Payet and show that there is life to West Ham after he inevitably moves on.
On Sunday, Southampton will take on Leicester in what will be a battle between Southampton's diamond and maybe Ranieri's 4-2-3-1. We've seen him tweaking with that a little bit. The Tinker Man is back. Be interesting to see what happens there. Or maybe the 3-5-2. We'll have to see. He's back in action with all his tinkering ways. Moving on now to a quick round of Would You Rather. Three quick questions. I want to know either way which way you're going to go on it. James, would you appoint Pep Guardiola or Mauricio Pochettino if you were in charge of a club?
I would appoint Mauricio Pochettino, one, because he's a lovely gentleman, by all accounts. Two, because he, on the training field, seems like an absolute nightmare. And three, he's so cool. He's cooler than Pep. I'm sorry. And I, you know, it was the moment Pep started wearing the Converse on the sideline. I was just like, you're trying too hard. You are now flying down into the lower regions of cool Premier League managers. You're there with Sam Allardyce. Yeah.
Ouch.
Poch, because he's cool.
Mo, Poch or Pep?
The best manager in the world, so Pep Guardiola.
Mm.
Like, on
Converse and all?
Converse and all, mate. He could wear Asics and I'd put him on the bench, mate. This is the greatest manager in the world. He's won more trophies than anyone else. He's essentially changed football. His fingerprints are all over the last two World Cup wins. He's working with absolute garden gnomes at Man City. Like, not in stature, but intellectually, you know. So, I mean, yeah, he's really got his work cut out for him. But no, Pep Guardiola, all day, every day. Give him a week to train with his players like Conte has. You watch what he does.
So Pep Guardiola can't deal with ceramics. But are you going to be a Pech or Pop, Ollie?
Pochettino by a country mile.
Ooh.
He works with what he's got. His back six costs less money than John Stones. And Spurs have got the best defence in the league, and Man City's is a shambles.
I mean, if that mic was worth something, I'd like to drop it, but let's not do that. Dele Alli and Christian Eriksen, or Kevin De Bruyne and David Silva? Ollie. The two free roaming
on
pairs.
On current form, it is an easy decision.
Is it?
I'd probably
better make it then.
I'm going to go with them just because they've been in great form recently. But it's Ericsson tough.
And Dele.
Yeah, I love Kevin De Bruyne, and obviously David Silva has been a brilliant player. But yeah, at the moment, I'd go for the first two.
James, where do you stand?
I mean, I love Kevin De Bruyne, and I mean, to have him at Shrewsbury Town, I'd cut off my left arm. But you know what? Dele Alli is he's brilliant, and he puts a smile on your face, and he kind of does everything.
He's got that smell for goal as well.
Yeah.
What they call it.
I could stick I could stick Dele Alli as a number nine, and he'd work it out. And then Christian Eriksen, honestly, I wouldn't even mind if you didn't give me Christian Eriksen. I'm having Dele Alli.
Wow, fair enough.
If you're listening, Dele.
Shrewsbury Town is where you need to go. What do you reckon, Mo?
Kevin De Bruyne and David Silva. Kevin De Bruyne is incredible. I mean, yeah, people are focusing on...
More assists than anybody else in Europe's top five.
People focusing on his lack of goals. And yeah, he hasn't scored since, I don't know, when was at the Ice Age, but it doesn't really matter. You saw the crossing he put in against Everton to make you kill that game off. It was a beautiful cross. Sterling panicked, flubbed it a little bit. You know, he's still creating... He created like numerous chances in that first half. If City's attacking players were in any way, shape or form, good form. I mean, and David Silva's majestic, isn't he? Come on. Just absolute class. Yeah, Silva and De Bruyne.
Would you rather win the Chinese Super League or earn a lot more money on a mid-table bench in Europe somewhere? Ollie?
Europe. For me.
Yeah? Mid-table obscurity on big money?
You know what? You know what? I'd rather play. Yeah, why not? Yeah.
Are you going to win?
I want to win the Super League.
Fair enough. Are you going to win the Chinese Super League or stay in Europe?
Yeah, a trophy's a trophy, even if it is kind of the equivalent of League One. I'm having the the Chinese Super League. I mean, it's bad. It's bad, but League One trophy's a League One trophy.
Chance of coming off the bench for West Brom or...
Win the Chinese Super League all day, every day. You get into the Asian Champions League, mate. Then you win that, you get the Club World Cup.
He gets to be Oscar, a pioneer in his own words. Pioneer.
Well, I wouldn't go that far, but you know, he's something.
Squawker versus now. We've got three quick questions between James Benj and Mo Butt is going to be the champion for Squawker today. Well, he might be the champion, he might not be. First question, who has created the most chances this season? Not just assists, chances. I've got four options for you. Hands up first, the person who wants to go first. Kevin De Bruyne, Christian Eriksen, David Silva or Dele Alli? Mo.
Christian Eriksen.
Incorrect.
De Bruyne.
It's De Bruyne. It's 1-0.
How did I not even know that? That's terrible.
Next question. Which Premier League player has made the most tackles since the start of the new year, since January the 1st? Got four options for you again. Oriol Romeu, Victor Wanyama, N'Golo Kante or Emre Can? Hands?
Emre Can.
Incorrect.
It's Victor Wanyama.
It is. It's 1-1. Ooh, the tension. Wilfred Zaha is away at the African Cup of Nations. Taking him out of the equation, which Premier League player has attempted the most take-ons since January the 1st? I've got four options for you. Raheem Sterling, Adama Traore, Adnan Januzaj or Marko Arnautovic? This separates the men from the boys.
Traore.
Incorrect.
Oh. Arnautovic.
It is. It's 2-1 to Squawker.
Mo
takes it.
I've spursed it up.
What a win.
Right up.
What a win. Incredible stuff. I'm going to turn now to your European game of the weekend. Who you want our viewers, our listeners, anybody to watch at the weekend around Europe, not in the Premier League. So James, going to come to you first.
AC Milan against Napoli. I'm sorry, Ollie. I've stolen it from you. It is. I think it's going to be a great game. I mean, suddenly that Fiorentina game has changed everything in Italy. Fiorentina being Juventus with the excellent new club crest that they have. I'll just throw that in there and see what response I get on Twitter. But yeah, in terms of Napoli, AC Milan, you know, Napoli have done really well in light of Milik's injury. You know, Dries Mertens turned into a fantastic player. And you've got that against Gigi Donnarumma. If I remember rightly, his family is Neapolitan. So there's a nice bit of rivalry there. Italy's best young goalkeeper taking on kind of one of the most formidable teams in Serie A. It's going to be a really great game Saturday. Watch it.
Ollie, what's your European game of the weekend?
I'm going to go to the Bundesliga for RB Leipzig against Frankfurt. It's second place, fourth. Leipzig are 3 points off Bayern, I think. And they're at home this weekend. Obviously, everyone knows that they've been sort of the revelation of the Bundesliga this season. But Frankfurt have been quietly sort of creeping up the table in recent weeks. So it should be a really... fascinating game between those two teams.
Mo, what's your European game of the weekend?
I'm going for Atletico versus Atletico Madrid in La Liga. It's going to be a great game. I think it's Atletico seventh, Atletico are fourth, but you know it's two real interesting pressing physical sides. It's going to be great. Atletico not lost at home since the opening of the season when they lost to Barcelona. They've been really really good since. But Atletico coming in, they've been a great run of form against Athletic at San Mamés. They've won the last three games there, and they've done that before. So it's really interesting. Atletico are sort of building momentum now. They're sort of maybe trying to get back to where they should be. It's going to be difficult, though, without Oblak and Gomez. Moya is no replacement. And, I mean, Athletic, they're out of the cup now. They've got eliminated by Barcelona, so they can focus solely on this. Adarith is going to be raring to go. As always, fantastic to watch him play. Iñaki Williams is really starting to bubble and come into the thing. I think it's going to be a great game.
But while we're in Spain, Real Madrid, they've gone from being 40 games unbeaten to then losing two in a row. And they're now just a point ahead of Sevilla in the league, who are away to Osasuna. I mean, that's probably, of all the title challenges, that's probably the pick of the games, isn't it, this weekend?
Sevilla-Osasuna, I mean, that's kind of a gimme, really. I mean, it's in at 11 a.m. in the morning.
So that's what I mean. That's probably the most winnable one.
Oh, yes,
because, I mean, Barcelona are away to Eibar, who aren't pushovers.
That could be a tricky game in Sunday evening. And then Real Madrid at home to Malaga, who can be quite stubborn defensively. Sevilla have got a pretty much... you don't want to say it's a gimme. Nothing ever is, really. I mean, Osasuna are terrible. So... if Sevilla show up and do the work, then they should be fine. It's a long way to travel from Seville to Osasuna. But, you know, other than that, it shouldn't be too difficult. What's going to be interesting, Madrid, it's just a simple thing. Is when you keep building momentum and winning games, eventually when you lose one, everything just sort of seems to go wrong. What's happened to Barcelona last year when their 39 streak ended? They didn't win for like another six games. They went on that terrible run. I don't think Madrid's run will be that bad. But I do think they really... They played decent and then they lost against Sevilla. But then against Celta, they were just terrible. They weren't very good. And it's like all the luck, the little dances that were going their way now, not going their way. Now the players are like, what are we doing here? And I mean, they're going to miss Carvajal. He's injured. He didn't play against Celta. That's really important. He's not necessarily a playmaker like Marcelo or Modric or something like that. But what he does is he sets the tone for them a lot. Mm. He's very aggressive. He's very confident.
Gary Neville-esque.
Yeah, very Gary Neville-esque. And when he doesn't play, they are noticeably worse because he's fearless, basically. And he sets a lot of the tone for them in attack and defense. He pushes forward, doesn't necessarily have to do anything with the ball, but he just sort of gets everyone else going. And I mean, that could be a problem for them without him.
Sevilla are almost in the same position in Spain that Spurs are in England. I mean, obviously the points difference is very different. Spurs have got to make up 7 points on Chelsea, which is a much bigger thing to do than Sevilla, who have one behind Real Madrid.
Well, four, really, because we've got the game in hand.
Yeah, they've got a game in hand, exactly. But Barcelona, they're the kind of evil empire. Can they strike back?
Yeah. I think that they're looking much better now. That they're sort of easing into things. Andre Gomez, you know, Luis Enrique played him and played and played him. We wondered why. Well, because eventually he'd figure it out. And he's starting to figure it out now. He's starting to get better. You know, Andres Iniesta, of course, is back, giving them a midfield. Luis Suarez is scoring goals again. That's huge. That's absolutely huge. He was so bad for vast stretches of the end of 2016. You know, he's scored. Neymar's got his goal now. The MSN, ended his goal drought. So that will go with his creativity now. His finishing has returned. So
watch his space. Freiburg will be hosting Bayern in the curtain raiser for the second half of the Bundesliga. I mean, that should be quite a good game as well, Ollie.
Yeah. I mean, we've suddenly got some competition in the Bundesliga, which is nice. Last few years, it's been Dortmund have been the only team that have been able to lay a glove on Bayern, really. And they're down
Berlin and Eintracht Frankfurt.
Yeah, Dortmund have really struggled. It's quite bizarre. They're down in sixth at the moment, and it's allowed, you know, the smaller teams like Leipzig, like Hertha, like Frankfurt to sort of creep up the table and, you know, minimise the gap a little bit. And obviously with Ancelotti, everyone knows that he's a cup manager, you know, more so than a league manager.
He's going to win the Bundesliga though, isn't he?
He should do, given, I mean, it's a shame in some ways that Dortmund aren't what they were last year, because they would be really, you know, troubling this Bayern Munich team. I think they will end up winning it, but it's nice to see, you know, the smaller clubs sort of thriving again in that league.
Well, thank you very much for joining me today. Mo, it's been great to have you on.
It's been great to be here.
From the Evening Standard, the London Evening Standard, I should say. James Benge, once again, thank you for joining us.
It's always a pleasure to get the call up, and I hope to be back soon.
Almost like a cap, international duty.
Absolutely, yes.
Absolutely. And Ollie, thank you very much for coming on.
Cheers, Greg. Been fun as usual.
It's always fun. Always fun, the Squawker Talker, so which fun. Is why you should tune in next week for another edition when I'll actually be hosting on Monday. We're going to flip it around, bit of rotation in our own squad with me doing Monday. Nick's going to be back on Friday, so do look out for that. We'll also have a special one-to-one between Rory Briggs and John Dillon. So check out that. Lots of interesting stuff going on. And do go to squawker.com if you have the chance, if you have the time to read all our wonderful articles, analysis, features, and all the rest of it. Follow us on Twitter and Facebook, the usual places, and see you again soon.